here, I'll turn it off.
Great, okay, now we're gonna start, we're in business again. Is the tape on?
Yes, we're resuming after some technical difficulties, so here we are again. Can we start with the show and tell?
I don't know what's left to tell here, but
yeah.
I mean, you maybe wanna.
Now that was called again?
I call it balance beam.
The balance beam.
That's what I call it. There may be another name for it, but that was used well after I started. So use this a lot for.
Mm-hmm.
We used to use it just for measurement weight.
Now, did all those have to change out after metric came in?
Oh yeah, this one was done long was finished long before metric came in. But this is the scale they use today. And they still use it. Now this is used for a lot of different things. For bushel weight, for dockage testing, and with the kicker that we were talking about before, they would measure a certain amount and I can't remember what the weight was that we used, but we weigh it out, and then we would put it through this dirty, put it through the kicker, and put the clean seed back in here, and then weigh it again, and that would tell us the percentage of dockage that was in it.
The difference between the two weights.
Yes.
You know.
And that's how we were. We make the difference for. And then we go into the moisture meter. It's also used for measuring the weight for testing moisture for the various grains. So this scale has a whole lot of different functions than that one.
Mm-hmm. So
but that's still used today, but there's better ones. This is the OHAS, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very popular, and they all had to be, as you can see, there's a sticker on here. And that's a government inspected. Every so often, people come and they check the scales, make sure that they're accurate, because they will wear out. I mean, these things, you slide them back and forth a lot, and they can wear out. So they do. They inspect them and put a sticker on it, and that tells the farmer, our customers, that we're.
So
really,
it'll be yearly.
No, don't worry about us.
Yeah, yearly inspection.
I'm not quite sure what it is.
Yeah.
I think it is. I think it's a yearly inspection, but you know, they don't always get around to it. And
mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but about a yearly inspection, yeah.
So for that one, the new one that you're talking about then, would you have a standard cup again that you would use?
Yes.
And then that would be poured into the...
Unfortunately, I haven't got
one
of those, but they're still... everybody still uses them, so they're not... You know, they're hard to get a hold of.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it looks something like this without the hoop on it.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's smaller than that. And that's what they use for bushel weight today. Yeah. Rather than having this big thing. So it's... and, of course, this is one of the older ones. The newer ones are a little bit, fancier. Most of them made out of plastic. They're lighter.
And digital?
Yes, they have digital, but I don't know whether they still have them in the... Yes, they do. They have digital ones as well. And that's much... but then, you know, wind and stuff will... Like, some of these would be... the digital ones, they would have quite a time to determine exactly what it is. It's very close, but I mean, you know, they... Because the wind can...
Mm-hmm.
Where these are... they're not...
More reliable under...
Well, no, I wouldn't say more
tougher
reliable.
Conditions.
It's just a little bit different. You know, you got to, if a guy was to stand and watch, you take a test on that thing and on a digital scale, they, you know, if they were doubting you at all, could say, well, that scale doesn't know what it's doing, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, no, they're very accurate.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And then once we get that sample, determine the dockage and the weight of the grain, of the per bushel, we go to the moisture tester, which is this thing here. Now this thing is used today. I mean, there's older models. This is the newer model because this is electric. they used to have batteries, it was battery operated. So then you could take it wherever you wanted. This one here, you have to be close to electricity. So, and there again, you'd weigh your sample, and the weight should be on here. What we need, I can't even remember. 60. Oh, that's wheat weighing 60 kilograms or higher. And you use, that's the number, I'm trying to figure out what the weight is. Meter, even temperature.
Well, so what does that chart?
Oh, 250, right there.
Yeah.
I can read the big print.
250 grams.
So this is a chart put out by the Canadian Grain Commission?
Yes.
Yes, and what is that chart intended to tell you?
This tells you the moisture reading. This is for hard red spring. Now, all different grain, even wheat, different kinds of wheat have a different chart.
Okay.
And that's because of the density and stuff. Like, there's hard wheat and there's soft wheat and all that kind of stuff.
So,
but anyway, what we did is we measured out 250 grams. And then we would pour it in here. And then we'd take this thermometer. This one isn't accurate, but and then we would let that come up to... We try to do it at room temperature. It's not always possible because you're in a hurry and stuff. But it's supposed to be room temperature. So once you figure that it's reached whatever it's going to settle at, and then you take that thermometer, and there's a temperature you see here in Celsius, and the different readings. And then you take we calibrate this thing. You know, I haven't got it plugged in.
Mm-hmm.
And we would calibrate that this needle would be right at that mark there. And then we would... You know, and you would work it there until it, and you do that, you calibrate it every time you use it, basically, so that it would be, because they can't go to calibration. So you do that to start with before you dump it, have that needle there, and then you drop this thing, and then you do it again. And then you, wherever, because it'll be back here, or wherever, and then you move it until you have that needle right back up to where it started from. And if it happens to be 100, then you would go to, of course this is, now I'm, got that one, 100, okay, well it won't be there, but let's say, well this will go as high as 47. Our
work together.
Yeah, but this will give you an idea as to what, so you take the meter reading, which is on here, and you take the temperature here, so if that says 19.5 and it's 19, so the moisture content would be 9.3.
Ah, okay, now if I'm looking here, is it just grain that goes into the...
Yes, you just drop it there and it drops down, and...
I see, so how did you do that? You just press this, or...?
No, this one here.
Oh, I see, okay.
And then you just put that in there.
Press the knob.
And then the grain drops down.
At room temperature. And
yes,
then
there's there's a cylinder in here. And that cylinder is hooked up to this machine.
Ah, and that takes the temperature.
That takes the, no, that takes the
moisture.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then you match the temperature with the reading on the chart here, on the meter.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you and the reason here, because weight can have quite a bearing on, like I said, the different grains, different wheats. But that's how it is. And they try, and there again, it's done this time of year, especially this year, that machine is used steady. You know, but when you're buying grain, after doing so many tests, you can pretty well tell without doing the reading that it's going to be dry.
Mm-hmm.
So...
So what is the moisture, what is the concern about moisture? Or why do they do a moisture test?
Oh, because grain will not store very well. And the 14.5 used to be, and I don't guess it's still the same, they change that once in a while, because the Grain Commission does, you know, but 14.5 used to be for wheat. Now, that doesn't mean... That doesn't mean that grain won't store at 15. Depending on the temperature. Now, this year, now, right now, if it was 15, would be no problem storing grain. And it depends too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, grain that's not cured will spoil a lot faster than grain that's wet because of rain.
So when you say cured, it wasn't left unharvested long enough?
That's exactly right. They swath it, or now, of course, now they do do a lot of straight combining, and they desiccate it, kill it before, so they don't have to swath it. But there again, everything else applies. Like the moisture, the grain still has to be the same moisture, and so on. And so, if they swath it a little bit on the green side, and it's not takes longer to cure, and there's a difference between curing and drying, because drying, it's just that there doesn't necessarily have to be wet all the way through. I mean, it can be, we have a moisture reading pretty high, but it's not, it has already been cured, and so therefore it is a difference. I don't know why it is a difference, but there is.
Well, there would be things still happening. You could have ones that are cured and wet, and
yes,
you could have ones that are green and wet,
yes,
which I guess is your worst.
Exactly.
Cased.
And a good example of that would be canola, which I'll get into later. But but it's quite important. You asked that why do they have to test it for moisture? Because it won't keep. It'll rot and spoil in the bins. And of course, the millers would have problems with trying to mill wet wheat.
So if you dry wheat, because
yes,
you can do the grains, and most country elevators now have the
yes, yeah,
ability to dry.
Yeah.
So is it then as good a quality as it would have been if it were dry coming in?
It can be.
Okay.
It can be, but there's a process that they have to go through. If they don't do it right, it hurts the quality of milling.
Uh-huh.
And seed.
Mm-hmm.
Seed doesn't germinate if it's seed, so they got to be very careful. Malting barley is another one. They got to be awful careful as to how they dry it. If it's dried too fast, too hot, and so a perfectly good sample of barley can be no good if it isn't dried properly, if they dry it. Yeah.
So was it a tricky business that people became better at as they became more experienced?
Oh, sure.
For the drying?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and you got to, like, today they have all these, all the electronic, you just set the machine and you go away for the night, you go to bed and the machine dries it, and after it gets to the right moisture and everything, and it has to go through a cooling process. That's also important, that you have to cool it properly before you bin it. So it does it automatically when it gets to a certain temperature, it puts it in the bin for you and puts another batch in the dryer.
But that wasn't the case for
a long time. No, when I was out there, because I didn't have a dryer, but that was the case there, yeah.
So what would happen, I'm just thinking of the practical aspects here, then if some farmer came, liked the price you were offering, would you give him a price before you did the moisture test, or you always did the moisture test before you?
Oh, always first.
So then you would, if you didn't have a dryer at your elevator and it needed to be dried, he would be somebody else's customer then?
Well, he could be, yeah, exactly. Or he'd go home years ago. I can't say I ever lost a customer because I've had a term for moisture, but they all had their own. There's a lot of dryers in the country at that time. Well, I guess there still is, but maybe, that's not as important because the dryers are at the elevator now.
Yeah. And what did dryers consist of when you were there?
Well, it just looked like there's different types. There was drum types and so on, but it just looked like a big silo, a fairly big silo. I could think of, and it was full of, these little holes in here.
The little screen holes.
Full of little holes so that the air can get out. And so they had, and it's kind of in a, it's a funnel type or a tunnel or whatever you might say, with another tunnel inside. And so it'll come up, which is done by propane,
okay,
propane heat, and then it would force it in with the air, of course, and then it would force the hot heat through the grain, which would come through these little pores onto the outside, big cloud of smoke, not smoke, but looked like smoke, big steam.
Yeah, steam, the moisture evaporating.
Yes, yeah, and there's a lot of, you had to be careful, like, there's a lot of fires, a lot of grain burnt up, but if these dryers caught fire. And they would, of course, and especially sunflowers with lots of oil, flax is another one.
So So how would they catch fire? Just not...
Well...
You go away and take another sample or
Either that or the heat is too hot and or they... See, it's supposed to turn, the grain is supposed to be moving. The grain would move inside this tunnel that I'm talking about. And it would move. And then maybe something happened that it quit moving. And then one spot got too hot.
Yeah.
And, it was... The fire was quite a common thing.
Would it destroy the dryer, or
careful that if you don't want to burn your grain, because if there's just a touch of a burn, then there again, the grain is no good. If miller doesn't want it, use it for feed. If the cattle will eat it, there's quite a process to it. It's had to be quite careful as to how you did it.
So shall we move along?
And another thing that we used with the grain dryers, but I use this one for checking samples of grain in the bin. And we go up to the farmer and check the moisture, the temperature in the.
That's it.
That's it. Yeah. Then you put there's a thread in here. You put a rod in it, and then you have a handle. It could be 20 feet long. So you can go right from the top to the bottom and see what the temperature was. So it's.
Did that experience. Move through the grain pretty easily, or was it fairly missing?
And then it gets hard. It's it's really packed, and then you'd have trouble getting. But then you didn't have to go far past that before you realize that there's a problem. So
And how often would you take the temperature of the bin?
Depends. I mean, sometimes never. It just depends on, in years when the quotas were, the grain wasn't moving. There wasn't many quotas, then you had to be there for 2 or 3 years sometimes. And that's when you went and checked. And then there would be grain beetles who could settle in, and then you'd have to go and treat them with phostoxin pills. I don't know whether anybody's explained that to you or not.
Not in any grain detail.
No. But then there again, we used a machine, something similar to this, that we used. You could use it for the same rod. And then we'd put pills and they turned it upside down like this and put some phostoxin pill. They put that in there, and then we had a little cap on the, because this wasn't pointed like this, it was flat, so you could put the pills in. And then you put a little cap in there on hinge, and then you put it onto the grain, and then you kept pushing to wherever depth that you wanted the pills to come out, and then you lift it up, and then the flap would open up, the pills would stay where you wanted them, and then tedious work, and you had to be very careful, because if you weren't careful, you might never come out of the bin, because it's very deadly. Nerve gas, that's what they used in the war years ago.
Jeez.
So,
yeah.
Caution.
Sort of think as you think about the wheat that then gets ground into flour with this deadly stuff in it. That must have been a concern.
I'm sure that the question came up that about this, but it's a gas, and I forget now how many hours we have. Was it 48 hours? I think maybe that we had run it up the leg and into another bin. We call it turning. And it's safe. You can walk in the bin and it wouldn't hurt you. So it's a gas.
Dissipated into the air.
Yeah. So what it did to the grain, I really don't know.
Yeah.
But
I imagine there was testing done.
Oh, I'm sure there was.
For residue testing.
See, today you can't even, it's not legal anymore to use it.
Yes, they use CO2, don't they?
Yeah, there's something, something different that they...
I think.
Yeah, they freeze it. it's different, yeah. And here's another... This is these two here. This one here in particular, we use that a lot. It's just a magnifying glass. And I will demonstrate how we used it. If I can find it. Yeah, here it is. Now, canola, this is canola. And there's a very hard to distinguish canola from mustard.
I was going to say, mustard.
Wild mustard would, could get into that thing, and that would spoil the grade like you wouldn't believe. Distinguish mustard from canola. because canola is a kind of a rough seed, and mustard is very smooth. And by using that, you could separate it and see how much.
So then you become like a diamond.
Diamond inspector.
That's right.
It's a very. No, I don't know whether that's set at the right height or not.
Oh,
no, you can move it.
Can you move it up and down?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry to go. Oh, I see.
Yeah,
that's quite powerful.
Oh yes.
So, this looks. Like there's different colors. So
that's
why
right.
would what would the different colors be?
Different colors of mustard. I mean canola. They can be different.
Okay, and some of them look fairly smooth, and some of them look wrinkly.
Yeah. Well, the smooth ones should be mustard.
Okay, and the wrinkly ones the.
Canola.
Canola.
Yeah.
Oh, and some with ridges on them.
Yeah, well, that would be canola.
Okay.
And another way of telling is taste it. Our son, Fair, 1 year, and we had this display there, and Barry Woods was there, and some other people, and myself, and there was other people from the company there. So anyway, they had this contest, and our son, he come and put this hat on the table, that he won the contest. And... just a young kid. And so anyway, what did you have to do? Well, different things. And anyway, come to the, he had to identify canola, canola and mustard. And so Barry asked me, because Barry was the main inspector at that time in Winnipeg. And he said, well, how did you know? He said, well, I just did what Dad did. He says, I tasted it. And he was the only one, including all the adults, that had that right. So anyway, but there's a very distinct taste. If you taste mustard, the taste of mustard, it's a hot taste, hot. This is just another form of a magnifying glass, but this they had a light that you turn onto here, and there's a light shone through there. And that would be more, in case of a dark old elevator office or something, you would put that light on. And it worked okay.
I just tasted it. I'd say it's canola.
Yeah. I think
it had nothing to do with the label on the jar that also says canola.
But we all had oh, not again. That fool thing.
Mrs. Season has joined us.
Oh, it keeps telling us to change the batteries. He's changed them twice. And what I do is I keep turning it on and off.
Yeah.
And I'll get one picture and then it says change the battery. So that's why I keep turning it on.
Yeah.
Is that on?
So do you want to get a picture of that? Come on, camera. Oh,
you do.
All right.
But they... The Grain Commission would set standards every year. What we would do at the time of harvest, certain elevator companies, elevators, it didn't matter about companies, they were just elevators, because they were trying to get a sample of the grain, say Stonewall and Killarney and wherever, to arrive at a standard. This is what we're going to be looking for. This is what we're going to be selling this year. Or this is what we have out in the country, as a, so anyway participated in this sample taking, they would have this average sample, but at the same time every elevator would have an average sample because we all did it through our companies, that we set a standard that this is kind of what the standard is for this year, and then we would set up samples. This is what, more so in wheat, oats, and barley, but especially wheat. But anyway, this is what, let's say, number one looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd also have samples of number two and number three and feed. We feed in them. This is rye, by the way, but wheat, for instance, we would have number one wheat. This is when we're grading, we could compare what we're looking at with this. This is what it should be like.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is this other? So,
and would it be just in little jars like
no,
this?
No, we have big samples. But
big samples.
I just use this for an example.
So a big sample would be what?
Well, you see that container there, for instance?
One of those
The size of that, the old machine. But they had special boxes that you could lock
and everything. Sample boxes, we call them. That's right, and the Grain Commission has bins of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what we would set up, and so that, yeah, you can't tell by this, but even I'm sure you've all seen it.
Looks like sesame seed to me.
Okay. What did you think of it?
Nancy probably has a much more interesting.
Well, it looks like... It looks like flax.
It's canary seed.
And that's, okay, it's sort of flax, but flax is black.
It looks
right?
like mouse seed. You know, mouse seed that we set up for.
Oh.
And that's what it is. It's mouse seed. It's canola seed laced with poison.
No.
Oh. But that's just one use.
Oh.
Northern sales.
And you said it's from what?
Northern sales. That's canary seed.
Canary seed. Yeah, my dad used to talk about that.
Yeah, and that's this sample came from.
Yeah, because flax
would
be black, right?
Pardon?
Flax is black.
Well, kind of a reddish color.
Yeah, but it's, it's much flatter than canary seed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would need training to be an inspector, obviously.
Well, everybody does.
So canary seed is what? Laced with poison.
Yeah, they put poison and they put it in little boxes, you know, that you can buy.
Not when you harvest it.
No, yes, I understand that part.
And why canary seed?
Well,
mice like it
there? Yeah, the mice just go for it.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, yeah, they love to get in the bin of. And there's some buckwheat. I don't know, make pancakes out of that.
Oh.
That one came from, that's Richardson's. Oh, no, this is the variety, Richardson Small. Mm. A very small variety, but it'll make the pancakes as well.
Neat.
So that's another one there.
I had a question about the, you were talking about the Grain Commission did its sampling, and then, you know, everybody received that, but that the companies did their own.
Yes.
Was there much of a variation?
No.
No,
because like I said, this Barry Woods I keep talking about, and he was the inspector in Winnipeg at the time for Patterson, in the Patterson office, and they worked very close with the Grain Commission at all times to make sure that everybody's on the same level, same length, wavelength, so that, for many different reasons, it can be for... Well, we wouldn't want to be one way, and then the opposition be another. So there'd be we'd lose customers. Put it that way, and so we all had to be the same. And there's another sample of grain that the wheat board had that. That's not grain, but that's wheat board had that set up. When they go to sell grain and stuff, they take that and just kind of for different people had it
to show their customers.
Yep, I guess so. I just happened to have that one.
Promotional piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm. Number of elevators. 2,900.
Yeah.
Don't think so.
No.
Not now.
What year is this one? Do they have it?
Oh, it is probably, yeah. How I got that one? My brother.
Missing piece.
He worked for the wheat board. But he passed away, and so he had a bunch of stuff that I just kind of...
That you took custody of.
Yeah, he didn't want it. His wife didn't. She wanted to get rid of it.
See, this is great. Export, inland, export, transfer elevators.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is great.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. I kind of like to keep it around. And I can take some of the stuff in here.
We're going to move to
indoors to discuss some of the paper items that are here. So we'll resume.
This is an antique.
Oh, yeah, that's an antique. And so we've got one there.